as far as the outcome of that mission was concerned, if everyone has been following the news, you guys know that the flotilla was illegally stopped by the Greek authorities. And as far as the official news is concerned, the orders that were sent to the Greek government were officially sent by the Zionist regime. Now, the request that was made was to share some experiences and some things that I've learned there in order to help everybody else here. So instead of sharing the events that happened there, I would actually share, as you move forward, I would actually share some of the things that I think that we as a community here at a local level that we are missing and that we have forgotten over time. And hopefully that will help us remember a few things and maybe move forward as a community. Without any further delay, we have three speakers tonight, and I would like to introduce our first speaker. She is an activist and a freelance journalist, and has spent a lot of time in the occupied West Bank and Gaza Strip. She has her own blog and also writes for various other independent media outlets. And she's here with us today, and she plans to go back to Gaza and volunteer with the Red Crescent in future. I would like you all to please welcome Eva Bartlett.
Palestinian resistance were responsible for the Arad attacks, saying instead did not say the Palestinian resistance group was responsible. But this is beside the point. As Israel bombs when it wants and continually, we just don't hear about it outside of Gaza. Just before I left Gaza, I was recently in Gaza, and I left about 2 weeks ago. Just before I left, I was trying to sleep on the roof of my husband's and family's house in Yerevan, which is in central Gaza. He was working on his laptop, and I was trying to sleep. The power was out, but it was unbearably hot inside, so we were on the roof. And so as I lay there looking at the stars and actually kind of romantically thinking how beautiful it was, I traced four Israeli fighter jets flying above us and to the east to where they bombed eastern Yerevan. About 5 minutes later, the Israeli warplanes returned and bombed 300 meters from our house in Yerevan. So the house was shaking. We kind of scrambled to the ground. He was trying to protect me from bits of flying debris. He even said it was raining because bits of debris started coming down. But most outside of Gaza won't hear about these bombings, even though they occur on a daily basis. What we hear in the news is, of course, what the Zionists allow us to hear, meaning either the words militant or terrorist or retaliation to something the Palestinians have supposedly done. Unless we are connected to people in occupied Palestine and learn from them firsthand, we never hear of the daily atrocities of the Zionists that they commit on Palestinians. Many of you know about these injustices in the occupied West Bank, in occupied Al-Quds, Jerusalem. There are military checkpoints. There are colonist attacks on farmers, on children, on homes. There are home demolitions, home expulsions, occupations. There are military lockdowns, inadequately named curfews. In 2007, I was in the West Bank for about 8 months, also with the ISM, the International Solidarity Movement. So as an activist there, I saw small villages or entire cities like Nablus undergo lockdown, curfew, where if citizens dared to exit their homes, they would be shot at or abducted. Israeli military teams would station outside of schools, waiting for children to start throwing stones, as any child would do under occupation, in order to arrest the children, interrogate them, beat them, psychologically scar them. Even when the children didn't throw stones, the Israelis still would abduct them and accuse them of stone throwing. In Azun, which is a small village near Palkilia in the occupied West Bank, we spent a month documenting the daily curfews, the lockdowns, and documenting the arrests, the abductions, and later realized these were all part of a larger plan to fence off Azun, to make that one more small enclave that the Israelis controlled, to surround the village with military checkpoints and control all entry and exit as they do with, for example, Nablus, and as all of the occupied West Bank, and to expand the colonist settlements to take more Palestinian land. Most of us, when we think of Palestinian farmers, think of olive trees hundreds of years old that have been pulled over, or think of the massive wall Israel's building to annex more Palestinian land. I think of the courageous villagers from Belain and Na'im, who, and other places in the occupied West Bank, who, in their quest for justice and the return of their stolen land, land annexed by the wall, they weekly face an astonishing arsenal of Israeli machine gun fire, tear gas, and, of course, the night raids to abduct popular resistance leaders. The hypocrites of the media and the peace industry always call for Palestinian Gandhi, ignoring thousands of Palestinian Gandhis killed, injured, or abducted by the Zionists, sitting right now in the festering cells of Israeli prisons. Baslam, a Belain villager, was killed by an Israeli fired tear gas canister to his chest. Ahmadi, a 21-year-old Palestinian from Gaza, was shot by an Israeli soldier at a nonviolent demonstration against the Israeli violent actions in the border regions. The soldier intentionally targeted Ahmed's femoral artery, causing him to quickly bleed to death. And these are just two of them. When I eat Palestinian olive oil, I remember harvesting with Palestinian farmers in the occupied West Bank, who had to jump through hoops to obtain permits from Israelis to access their own land, and who in the end were inevitably attacked by Israeli colonists or the army, or both together. I also think of farmers in Gaza like Jabir and Leila Arjula, who live 500 meters from the Green Line border separating Gaza and Israel, and whose land once flourished with hundreds of olive trees, guava, orange, date, lemon, and nut trees. Jabir and Leila are two of the most resilient people I've ever met. Their trees have been bulldozed, their house shot up by Israeli machine gun fire, their children terrorized by Israeli or Israeli military invasions. But Jabir and Leila still replant, still return to their home. The strength they show us is the strength of all Palestinians under occupation. Our ISM work in Gaza was largely accompanying fishermen and farmers as they tried in the most impossible circumstances to work their land or to fish. On the boats, fishermen are sprayed with Israeli machine gun fire. They are shelled and they're doused with a sewage-scented water cannon, or they're abducted. All of this occurs even within the arbitrary 3-mile limit imposed by the Israelis, even though Palestinian fishermen under Oslo Accords have the right to fish 20 nautical miles out. Palestinian farmers defy the Israeli imposition of a 300-meter buffer zone, which is a no-go zone. But bear in mind that this is only technically 300 meters. In reality, it extends to about 2 kilometers. The Israelis shoot from remote-controlled machine gun towers from Israeli military jeeps. They shell and they use persistent drone missiles to target Palestinians. But the farmers, out of necessity, still face these incredible dangers, walking with their donkey and cart to harvest parsley or peas or whatever dangerous crops the Israelis don't want them growing. Gaza's farmers used to harvest wheat and rye, but these crops are routinely plowed under or set ablaze by the Israeli army. Many farmers are paid laborers, literally risking their lives for the equivalent of $5 a day. Even though I had read about Israelis targeting farmers and fishermen, it's quite something else to witness it. Imagine this. It's a quiet morning. A handful of farmers are bent over their parsley, bundling it, loading it onto a rickety donkey cart. Everything they're doing is clearly visible to the Israelis via their drones, their blimps, their cameras. Israeli military jeeps stop along the border fence, watch, leave, return, watch, leave, return, and then just open fire. The bullets fly past so closely you hear them whiz. You almost taste them. Then a farmer goes down. He's been hit. It's something that I tried to mentally prepare for, but when it happened, I was still incredulous. Then again, I have to say that about everything I witnessed in Gaza, I was incredulous. To read about a bombing is one thing. To feel it 15 meters away is another. And to watch the bombs unleashed for 23 nonstop days is terrifying for the lives of the 1.5 million locked within Gaza. Palestinian medics are routinely targeted and killed by Israeli soldiers, sniped at, beaten, arrested, even bombed with dart bombs, which spew thousands of razor-sharp darts, which shred bodies. Alpha Abdeldaim, Alai Al-Khamo, he was killed this way. He was a father, a high school teacher, and a longtime medic. During the 2008-2009 Israeli massacre of Gaza, he was hit by a dart bomb. Among the 1,500 Palestinians who died as a result of the 2008-2009 Israeli war in Gaza, 16 Palestinian rescuers were killed and 10 more injured while attempting to do their work. All the Israeli attacks are, of course, illegal, but what could be more obviously illegal than targeting medics and preventing them from being injured? On the first day, Israel proclaimed 4-hour humanitarian ceasefire, still during the war on Gaza. Hassan, a medic I was accompanying in the Red Crescent ambulances, was shot in his leg by an Israeli sniper while he was trying to retrieve the body of a martyr. It was during ceasefire hours, he was visibly a medic, visibly unarmed, and he was targeted. Later reports revealed that Israeli soldiers had specific orders to target rescue workers. Imagine the outcry, the lambast in the corporate media, if Palestinians targeted Israeli medical workers. But that's the problem. If every signal injustice that Palestinians are exposed to were flipped, if it happened to the Israelis, there would be a massive outcry in the media. I'd like to end by quoting some words from a recent speech speech by Chris Hedges, an American journalist, whose words aptly and eloquently describe a situation recently in Palestine. He says, "The incursion and bombardment of Gaza is not about destroying Hamas. It is not about stopping rocket fire into Israel. It is not about achieving peace. The Israeli decision to rain death and destruction on Gaza, to use lethal weapons of the modern battlefield on a largely defenseless civilian population, is the final phase in a decades-long campaign to ethnically cleanse Palestine. The assault on Gaza is about creating squalid and impoverished ghettos in the West Bank and Gaza, where Palestinians' lives will be barely sustainable. It's about building a series of ringed Palestinian enclaves where the Israeli military will have the ability to instantly shut off movement, food, medicine, and goods to perpetuate the misery, for example, Gaza. Israel uses sophisticated attack jets and naval vessels to bomb densely crowded refugee camps, schools, apartment blocks, mosques, and slums, to attack a population that has no air force, no air defense, no navy, no heavy weapons, no army, and calls it a war. It is not a war, it's murder. The public debate about Gaza attacks engages in the absurd pretense that it is Israel, not the Palestinians, whose security and dignity are being threatened. This blind defense of Israeli brutality towards the Palestinians is betrayal of the memory of all those killed in other genocides in other times. The lesson of the Holocaust is not that Jews are special. It is not that Jews are unique. It is not that Jews are eternal victims. The lesson is that when you have the capacity to halt genocide and you do not, no matter who carries out that genocide or who it is directed against, you are culpable." Those are the words of Chris Hedges. I take hope from the growing Palestinian-led movement for boycott, divestment, and sanctions against Israel until Israel complies with international law and Palestinians' rights. Moreover, I take hope from the very Palestinians I see oppressed, slaughtered, and imprisoned. It is they who, through the hardest of times and brutalities, show love, humor, and humanity. And it is they, the occupied, the under siege, the 10,000 imprisoned, that we must stand with until justice is achieved.
Thank you for sharing that information.